This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, I'm Chuang with Charles and Xiaoling. So the American markets had a very nice, good session overnight. Obviously, there's been a lot of good news on the infrastructure front and on the bank stress front. What were the numbers looking like?
Well, over in the US, the US were in the green. You had the Dow up 1%. You had the S&P 500 up 0.6%. And the NASDAQ was also up 0.6%. The Asian markets, though, were looking a little bit more mixed.
Yeah, they were flat. So Nikkei, Shanghai, Straits Times were all flat. Hang Seng up 0.2%, while back home, FBM KLCI was actually down 0.6%.
So to get into the whys and wherefores of the markets, we've got on the line with us now Carlos Casanova, the senior economist at UBP out of Hong Kong. Carlos, now lots of good news out of the Americas last night. Joe Biden had his $579 billion infrastructure program passed, I think on a superficial level, but there's been a lot of discussions into the buts as well. What do you think is going to be the economic growth impact on an economy that's already recovering?
Mm-hmm. Good morning, everyone. So we have seen quite a lot of positive news coming out of the US. We have seen news that is maybe not positive from a consumer standpoint, but conducive to faster than expected tightening. So that is translated into a lot of volatility, sometimes upwards, sometimes downwards. You remember last week we saw a big correction that is now seemingly recovered after the gains overnight. So in terms of economic activity, we are expecting, you know, this larger fiscal package to be conducive to higher growth. The Fed revised its growth forecast to 7% during its last FOMC meeting. We do expect that it could be even higher. So our current forecast is 7.3%. And of course, there is now being talk about Fed tapering as soon as 2023, or at least there is more division amongst the members of FOMC. Of the FOMC, with three members expecting the Fed to implement 50 basis points in tightening in 2023, and then there were seven over that assessment and eight under that assessment, so still some division. But definitely, the direction going forward seems to be clearer, and the markets are reacting to that.
But Carlos, last night also the Biden, at least they announced that they're probably going to get an agreement with regards to a $1 trillion infrastructure plan, right? What kind of impact will that have on the broader U.S. economy?
Well, I think the impact will be bigger. Infrastructure typically has a large multiplier effect. So when we say the growth is going to reach 7.3%, of course, this infrastructure program is something that has been discussed for many months now. We factor some of that assessment in. Longer term, I think it's interesting because the US does actually need quite a bit of infrastructure. So it could lead to higher potential growth going forwards. We might see 7.3% this year, but growth will remain more elevated in the years to come if that $1 trillion does materialize into effective infrastructure. So it's quite a positive development for the U.S. economy. On the other hand, that has to be financed from somewhere. We have seen a widening of the twin deficits. By that, I mean the current account deficit and the fiscal deficit. And so that is a conversation that I think we will have to have next year once the sort of optimism starts to wane.
Yeah, Carlos, the other big catalyst yesterday in America was the fact that the banks passed their stress test with some flying colours as well. Obviously, investors are quite confident that it's going to be a huge bumper year for dividends and capital payouts. Do you think the economy in America is healthy enough, though, to be able to absorb these kind of dividend payments in terms of the vaccinations and the COVID situation?
So definitely assuming, of course, the big risk for the global scenario is the big spike in the Delta variant globally, right? But given very high vaccination rates in the US, we do expect that this will be more of a marginal risk than something that is going to happen very likely. So in that context and in the context of higher growth, we do think that the results of the stress tests overnight are very positive. For investors looking to gain exposure to the banks in the US, especially given that the valuation floors are attractive, and then you have that very compelling narrative on dividends. So it is definitely something interesting and it is positive news for investors looking at that space.
All right, so good news on the U.S. front. But looking over in China, Chinese activity indicators for May underperformed forecasts. What are you seeing for the month of June? Are we going to see a pickup in retail sales and industrial production at this point?
Mm-hmm, correct. So the decline in year-on-year terms was expected because we are coming from a high Q1 due to base effects surrounding the lockdowns last year. The most important indicator, and I've said this many times, for May was the sequential growth in retail sales. And we saw sequential growth in retail sales pick up from 0.25 to 0.81% month on month. Heading into June, there is some data to suggest that this pickup in sequential growth will continue. So we've seen very strong performance on the export front. We've seen sort of the services and non-manufacturing PMIs maintain some of their, you know, their momentum. Of course, overall, we are heading towards more of a stability ground from a very high Q1, but we do still see momentum there. So we do expect that the recovery in sequential growth in retail sales will continue, and retail sales will reach approximately 15% growth in 2021. So that's the average growth for the whole year. Having said that, the recovery to 0.81% from 0.25% was a little bit disappointing. I was expecting more of growth in the range of 1% to 1.5% month on month. So it is possible that the pickup will be more gradual than expected, so that June number will only be marginally higher than what we saw in May. So this is just going to be more of a gradual story for China going forwards, which is normal because China is at a more advanced stage in its recovery.
And Carlos, what's been disappointing actually has been the performance of the ringgit. So can you tell us the reason for it? Is it due to US dollar strengthening, or are there reasons for Malaysia for a sudden outflow?
In my opinion, there are both factors are probably playing a role. The most important factor, however, is the US dollar strength. I think following the FOMC meeting, the market reacted to the prospect of sooner than expected tightening. And so we saw depreciation over the board in the Asia Pacific space. Of course, the degree to which currencies depreciate against the dollar depends on many things, including some idiosyncratic risks. And in Malaysia, we have some of those because, you know, lockdown measures are still in place, and the clarity regarding the exit is not maybe as clear as in other parts of Asia. So we did see a bit more of a depreciation in the ringgit there. But we are by no means in a scenario like 2013. First of all, because, you know, there's still some division amongst FOMC board members. So this 2023 scenario could still change significantly. And second, you know, there are some things that differentiate Asia now from Asia in 2013. First of all, the current account is now in surplus. The valuation floor is a lot more robust, meaning, you know, it is less likely that we're going to see outflows, at least from the equity space, in 2021 compared to where the relative valuation was in 2013. And of course, the last factor is that, you know, Asia remains a more dynamic area relative to other emerging markets. So although investors tend to sort of pull everything together and talk about developed markets versus emerging markets, in my opinion, you know, there are other areas in the world where the risk is higher. That risk of, you know, outflows in case the Fed starts to taper is much higher than in Asia, where the fundamentals are strong and the sort of longer term narrative remains quite attractive.
Okay, Philip, Carlos, thank you so much for that. That was Carlos Casanova, the senior economist at UBP. I've got Philip on my mind this morning. Don't know why. Anyway, so obviously there's lots of influence into American equities. Good outlook for the American economy. Obviously, energies, industrials rallied overnight. Banks rallied overnight. It's all gangbusters in America right now. And Thomas, talking about gangbusters, sales of sports shoes, Nike, have gone gangbusters.
That's right. Nike on Thursday reported fiscal fourth quarter earnings and sales that topped analyst estimates, fueled by record revenue in its largest market, North America. Nike's net income for the period ended May 31st rose to $1.5 billion, compared to a loss of $719 million a year earlier. So that translates to a net income of 93 cents per share.
Now, what's interesting is digital sales were up 41% compared with the prior period last year, and rose 147% compared to the same period in 2019. Meanwhile, the company said its membership model is helping fuel its e-commerce business. So clearly, a lot of people, despite staying at home, still buying sneakers, maybe wearing a lot of Nike t-shirts and shorts while they're lounging around the house, perhaps explaining the rather good numbers. Very quickly also, there was results coming up of FedEx. They reported fourth quarter net income of $1.9 billion compared with a loss of $334 million in the year ago period. So pretty good set of numbers. The question for them is, how much are they going to spend on CapEx? Because they've come out to say at analyst briefings that they intend to spend that money. So actually, FedEx was down in after hours market trading as a result of that.
Obviously, all those packages flying back and forth, including some shoes and sneakers. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.